How is Team Fentress doing?
Bill Russell, Dumars, Jordan, Harden.
That's what I was thinking. No.
Greatest defensive players ever.
I'll tell you,
The Fentress clan is doing great. How about you?
Great. No complaints. Had some time off. Didn't really do much, but, you know, sometimes that's a good thing to do. Nothing.
Did you play golf?
I played golf a couple times. Very enjoyable. It's still kind of weird. Well, you know, everybody's got their own cart. You can't, you know, you're not picking up the flag. It's, but, you know, it's out there, but nice and relaxing. So I've been gone a week and a half, and unbelievable, the passing of some legends. I wanted to start with John Thompson because, you know, before moving out here, I was a Big East junkie. You know, a guy like that puts the school on the map. First black coach to win a national title. Literally a titan in the business. Just thoughts on, as one commentator said, you know, this man of magnitude.
Yeah, man. John Thompson was a big deal, especially I remember as a kid. They won the title
84
season, right?
No, they
won, oh, that's right.
Yeah, because
84 they choked 83, right? Or choked 85.
85 was when they lost to Nova. Yeah,
right. That's right. So I remember how big a deal it was that, you know, you had a black coach that was leading a top five team, and they had lost to North Carolina in the national title game. I think it was my eighth grade year or something like that. And so for me and all my friends, African-American friends, it was like, that was our team. You know, they were 3,000 miles away at a school we'd never heard of, right? But that was our team because you had a black coach and then almost, I think they were, weren't they pretty much all black? They only had like one white guy on the whole roster or something like that?
Right, for most of his duration through Iverson and Mutombo and Mourning.
Yeah, so and I remember kids wearing Georgetown jackets to school at Grant High School in Portland, Oregon. It was so bizarre. And then the funniest part of the whole experience for me, as someone who was following it, was when I discovered, because most of us assumed Georgetown was like a black college.
Right.
And we realized that pretty much the only black students at the college were the Georgetown basketball players. But no, they were a cultural phenomenon. I don't know. There was a 30 for 30 on them, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it was an amazing story.
The Hoya Destroyer and how huge they were from a cultural standpoint, the Ewing years especially. No, that was a big deal. He always preached, you know, academics. He always preached, you know, being a good citizen. He was trying to raise young men as well as basketball players. So, no, John Thompson was definitely a giant in the industry for sure.
No, it's weird when I think about it because until I moved out here, I was a Georgetown fan in basketball and a Miami fan in college football. Because, you know, picture where I lived before the formation of the Big East, there was no major anything close by, whether it was Nova or anything. But then all of a sudden it was like, you're starting the Big East and there's a network and there's a team in New York and Philly and Jersey and D.C. and Boston. It was the best thing ever. It really was.
Right.
And by the way, speaking of coaches who put programs on the map, Lute Olson in Arizona. You know, he took over a program that was not even an afterthought and made the tournament 23 straight years. So, you know, thoughts on his passing. I'm by the numbers, aside from Wooden, probably the most successful coach in college history. This conference, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and you might know this better than I, but Arizona wasn't much before he got there, right?
There were nothing.
Yeah, so that was a true situation where someone arrived somewhere and built it up into a power and stayed there, you know, for their career and had success, you know, over different decades and put a lot of guys into the NBA. I think you would agree that the most successful program on the West Coast since the Wooden UCLA team.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually covered some Pac-12 basketball, so I covered one year of his teams, and I don't think they were that good that year, though. But funny story, little sidebar, the time I did cover Lute Olson, I was covering Pac-12 basketball, And so that meant I could go anywhere in the conference I wanted to. And since I'm a Carolina fan, Carolina was playing at Arizona. So I'm like, you know what, I think I need to cover that. So I literally went to Arizona just pretty much to watch the Tar Heels. And I wrote a story on Arizona while I was down there. And so I got to, you know, not spend a lot of time with him, but I got to meet him and talk to him a little bit. And that was towards the end of his career. And I remember there was already grumblings out there that maybe he wasn't in great health, et cetera, et cetera, how much longer he's going to last. But yeah, he did a great job at Arizona, obviously. But yeah, it's pretty sad for a college basketball to lose two guys like that in 1 week.
I want to get to the Blazers as we continue with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, and you know, another downer, but Cliff Robinson dying, like Duckworth and Kersey and Petrovic, all from that 90 finals team. I mean, you're up there, you cover the team, you're in Portland. I mean, how heartbreaking is this? And another guy from that team dies so young.
Yeah, it's you know, that was a beloved team, still is a beloved team. To have three members, and of course, you know, Drazen Petrovic was on the 90 team as a bench guy and went on to become, look like he was going to be a superstar for the Nets before he died in a car accident. So all four of those guys have passed away. You know, a car accident is one thing where obviously that's a tragic situation and sort of like, you know, random, you know, bad luck situation. To have three guys die for health reasons before 53, or I guess almost 53,
54, yeah.
44, that is stunning, you know, because you're talking about professional athletes. And, you know, I reached Clyde Drexler to talk about Cliff, and he made the comment. He's like, I can't think, something along the lines of, he can't think of another great basketball team, let alone any other team, that had, you know, three guys die, before 55 for health reasons. Like, it's just, it's heartbreaking. It's sad for all of them, and it's sad for Portland, because even though that crew didn't close, they lost to the Detroit Pistons, they lost to the Blazers, they lost to Magic and the Lakers in the West Finals. They lost to some all-time great teams. They're still, you know, I think they're viewed as pretty much champions. I mean, it's almost like, you know, Portland's version of the Buffalo Bills football team, right?
Sure.
It's viewed as heroes and champions, even though they didn't really close it. So to have those three guys, you know, gone like that is just wow, you know. And Cliff, you know, it's interesting because Cliff didn't put it out there that he had lymphoma. Like, that kind of came out of nowhere. I think his close friends knew, but I don't think publicly that was out there. At least I hadn't heard it.
Me either.
Yeah.
No, that's, like I said, the suddenness, even, you know, the owner, Paul Allen, dying at 65, that's not old. I mean, so you look back on that team and it's like you just want to cry. It's sad. So as far as this team who, you know, made that incredible run, I mean, when you consider what they were when Gobert tested positive and the world stopped, I don't think if you get to cover that team or if you're a fan, I don't think you could have asked for much more than the run they took everybody on.
The Blazers?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You said okay. You threw me off with Gobert. I wrote a few days ago, I wrote something basically saying, you know, you can't, they lost 4-1, but you can't really walk away from that experience as a fan, I don't think, being disappointed. And it used to crack me up. There's a few nights where I'd see people crying about the coach. Stop. What are you doing? Stop. I'm thinking, man, are you people crazy? Because this team was one win away from not making the playoffs. One other loss, they don't make the playoffs.
Yep.
They had to grind through it. They got some luck along the way. Lillard put on, you know, a show for that 3-game stretch. You had Nurkic playing, you know, while his grandmother was in a coma and then she passes away. You had Carmelo changing positions at age 36. You know, he was up and down, but he was huge in some clutch situations. You had Gary Trent possibly emerging as a future major piece for this team moving forward. And everyone knew what you were playing for. You were playing for the right to lose to the Lakers. Now, no one's ever going to say that, but there was not one team that was going to, you know, get that eighth seed that was going to have a chance to beat LeBron and Anthony Davis. But that race is what carried the early part of the bubble, because everyone else had a playoff seed locked, playoff position locked up. They just didn't know the seeding for sure. So you really only had a race for one spot. That was the only compelling thing going on, and the Blazers made that thing sing. Now, the Suns were doing their thing as well, but they had a long, you know, uphill climb to get back into it. They went 8-0. That was impressive. But the Blazers were the story of the restart until the playoffs started. And I think if you're a Blazers fan and you look at the fact they got Nurk back, they obviously look better with him. He should be back next year. If you have that whole team back next year with Ariza and Hood, I think you're going to be a 50-win team. I don't think you're going to contend for the title, but you at least know that your future looks pretty bright with that crew.
A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress. Yeah, back to something you just kind of glossed over. We know that the top free agents never look Portland's way. They're rarely bad enough to get an impact lottery pick. So with the hand he's dealt, what is your read? Because I like Stotts a lot. Well, what's your read on the caliber of coach he is?
You know, I haven't dove into it much in terms of the X and O's. Like, I remember on Talking Ball, like, 5 years ago, Dwight James and, like, Dan Sheldon and someone else, Jerome Kersey maybe even it was, because I did shows with him for a couple years, were, like, discussing whether they should blitz the pick and roll or not. They didn't do more of this, and blitz the pick and roll, they didn't run that. And I'm just sitting there the whole time thinking, they can do anything y'all want them to do. They don't have the pieces to beat the Spurs back then, or to beat the Warriors. Like, they just don't have them. And so, you know, Stotts has gotten into the playoffs 7 straight years. I don't believe they've ever, the only year you could say they really underachieved, I think, was the year they lost to Memphis, and then the year they lost to the Pelicans, they got swept.
Yeah.
The Memphis year, though, Aldridge was banged up. Wes Matthews had already been out with an Achilles, so that team was kind of down, and McCollum hadn't emerged yet. So I kind of give him a pass on that. And the Pelicans thing, yeah, that was bad. But every other year, they overachieve. I mean, how many times did they beat the number on the over-under, right, for their win totals for the season? They upset Houston. They upset the Thunder. They got to the West Finals 2 years ago. Like, I think, for the most part, Stotts has done a good job. Now, I posed this to some naysayers out there on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I'm like, okay, let's say you fire Stotts. Who are you going to get?
Always the question.
Who's coming to Portland to take over Portland that's better than Stotts? I don't know. Maybe there's some young up-and-coming guy I don't know of or whatever. Who knows? But I don't think that's the problem. I would be surprised if they fired him. But you never know if at some point a franchise says, you know, we've had this guy for a long time. Maybe we need to try something different. So we'll see.
And lastly, I know it's all guesswork, but you mentioned Melo, his age. So I guess a two-parter. How big a priority should it be to try keeping him? And from what you've heard, you know, gut or whatever, how would you gauge the chances of him coming back to Portland?
Well, he kind of falls into the same category as Enes Kanter and Seth Curry last year, because those guys came and did a great job for the Blazers. They went to the West Finals with those guys being huge pieces. But because they played so well, they received more money
right.
on the open market. And the Blazers were so far out of the cap, they couldn't, you know, they didn't have bird rights on these guys, so they couldn't really bring him back. So you wonder, A, is another team going to make a push for Melo and say, you know what, we would like to have Carmelo Anthony. We'll give you our mid-level exception or part of it. Because right now he's making 2-point-something with the Blazers. The mid-level is like 9. You can split it up. Someone gave him 6, 7, 8. He's probably going to go take the money, right? Not many people are not going to do that. But I don't know if that opportunity is going to be out there, because no one wanted him a year ago, right? So why is someone going to want him now at 36, going on 37? So I think there's a good chance the market is going to be very light for him, and that would make it more likely that he could come back. But he has to be willing to come back at a small number, and who knows if he's going to be willing to do that. If he's serious about finding a home in Portland and about playing with Dame and having a chance to win, then a guy who's already made $150 million in his career, he's going to turn down a few extra million to go somewhere else and stay in Portland. So we'll see. I mean, if they can keep him for cheap, I think you keep him, but you let him know that he may or may not be the starter. Like, I think that's up in the air.
No, that's a good take. All right. Well, I'm back. You're back. Always appreciate your time. And we'll catch up next week, and who the hell knows where we'll be at that point.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.